Broadcasting for the left longer than Air America has been around, it's Bart Cop Radio.
Saw a headline in the paper. Teen who ran sex webcam criticizes Justice Department. Justin Barry. And isn't it funny he used his real name? I saw this kid on Oprah. It is a sad deal. He bought a camera so he could talk to his friends and they could see each other, whatever. Apparently word leaked out that he had a camera or something. Anyway, one day he just struck up a conversation with some other people, I assume with cameras. And he said, he told the story on Oprah. Time went by and these people got to be his friends. It was apparently a ring. This is a sex ring of older men, something. He was like 15, so yeah, all men are older to him. After they got to know him like a month, one of them said, hey, dude, I'll send you $150 if you take your shirt off. And he said, swear to God, take off my shirt, $150? Sure. So he did that. And then someone else said, I'll give you $100 if you take your shirt off. And then, you know, pretty soon, kids making $1,000 taking the shirt off. And as you might suspect where this story is going, as time went by, like the next month, they said, hey, we'll give you $250, you take your pants off. And he's going, well, hey, instead of making $1,000, now I'm going to make $2,500. And he did that. And pretty soon he was naked and touching himself. And then they, you know, we'll give you $1,000 if you can bring a young girl over and do her and let us watch and this and that. And they eventually lured him to Vegas. Of course, Vegas has to get the bad reputation on this, but they lured him to Vegas and eventually these men raped him and it was a bad thing. And nobody likes that and it should be cracked down on. Oh, anyway, back to the story. Justin Barry, who for 5 years starred in his own webcam child pornography business, told the House Energy and Commerce Committee that the Justice Department is moving too slowly to round up 1,500 pedophiles whose information he surrendered last year. Barry, now 19, said the names, credit card numbers, and other details he provided have resulted in only one arrest. Justice Department spokesman Brian Sierra, sounds like Bravo Sierra, the code name for bullshit, would not discuss Barry's case, but said there has been a threefold increase in federal prosecutions of child pornography and abuse cases over the past decade. You would think something like this would almost be a story. This kid ran a sex business, and now he feels bad about it, and he was taken advantage of. I mean, when you're 15, you're just not so sharp, but he apparently made mega thousands of dollars. He said he had 1,500 people who, kind of like Bart subscribers, gee, wish I had 1,500. 1,500 people, I don't know if it's a week or a month, were sending him money to watch his escapades, and he's got the names and credit card numbers. Now think, you can't charge something on a credit card. You have to have an ID. I don't know all the ins and outs, but you have to have an ID to get a Visa card or an American Express or whatever. And this kid had their name and their card numbers. So at the car lot, we had a credit machine, whatever you call it. You punch in the guy's name, his address, social security number, this and that, and it, you know, tells you his life story in credit. So this kid turns over 1,500 names to the Justice Department saying these are perverts that are paying children to take their clothes off. And the Justice Department has arrested, what do you say, one guy? Only one arrest. Out of 1,500, the Justice Department is too busy to go after these people. The same day that the delay news broke, this kid opened the nightly news. It's later in this issue, should be, if I can find it. They said, hello, welcome to the evening news. Justin Barry took his clothes off for a webcam and they won't arrest the people. And also, Tom DeLay resigned today. So it was that big a story on the news. But where in the hell is the Justice Department? Why can't they arrest these people? What they say is that they're too busy. There's just so many of these cases. And I don't buy it. I don't buy it for a second. They got plenty of officers to run down people who may be smoking God's flowers. In my opinion, as long as there's one officer available to run after someone smoking pot, then they're not trying to catch these child pornographers. And you'd think they would have some priorities put together to where, I mean, between a 50-year-old man smoking something that he grew in his backyard or these predators, you should have heard this kid when he was on Oprah. He told a pretty convincing story. The only bad news is his story sounded kind of rehearsed, but maybe he's told it many times. You know, if you tell a story 50 times, the 50th is going to sound a lot like the 49th and like a speech. You're going to have it polished and everything. But he told the story about how, you know, they were very skillfully, you know, say you're a stranger, you're a kid on the web with your new camera and someone says, I'll give you $50 to take your pants off. You're not going to do that. Well, I'm sorry, I wouldn't do it anyway, but the point is, they didn't start out that way. They start out, hey, oh, that lesson you said was clever. You're a clever guy. Boy, I'll bet your friends like you. You're such a cool dude and all that. And, you know, they get into his confidence. And then as the month went by, he said the biggest thing was the patience they had, that months went by with this incremental business, you know. And so they lured him. That's what kind of rang true to me, how he was lured into this ever so gradually. And then, of course, the big money started coming in. Well, it's funny. At one point, he, I guess his parents found out. And he said, he had all these packages coming during the day. He was at home during the day, and mom and dad were out. And, you know, FedEx and UPS, they're bringing by all these fabulous gifts. The kid's loaded. The kid's making, he's like $5,000-$10,000 a week. And so he's buying gifts. He's got this money and all that going on. Anyway, at some point, his parents found out. And they weren't sure what to do, so they sent him to Mexico to live with his real father. And his real father, when he told him the story, he said, dude, how can we make more money? Let's buy more cameras. We'll do more of this. So his dad set him up further in the business, which is very sick. I'm sure we all want to have our child masturbating on the internet for money. He's got the proof right on his computer, 1,500 names of these perverts sending him money to do gross and perverted things. And the Justice Department just sitting there. They're looking real hard at some kid. Remember the last issue? Last radio show, we talked about that guy in Canada who was mailing seeds out. Oh, they're hot and heavy on that guy. Can't have marijuana seeds. No. Over here, we got these children being enticed into doing all kinds of weird things. But, oh, we don't have time to go after that. We're going after this guy over here with the seeds. That is just crazy business. Picking up the USA Today. Wednesday, April 5th. USA Today's editorial page. They're screaming at three political people, the heights of arrogance. Tom DeLay was a bad, bad man, they're saying. We all agree. Cynthia McKinney was a bad, bad woman. It just kills me. And then the third is Jack Abramoff. So these three people, they're calling the height of arrogance. Here's Tom DeLay, who for, 22 years he was in Congress, blackmailing people, strong-arming people, threatening people, threatening lobbyists, threatening Democrats, threatening everybody. You know, they call him the hammer because he was used to forcing his way through everything. Yeah, okay, that's arrogance. And as Jack Abramoff, he's going to prison for all the bad things he did. Yeah, that's arrogance. And here we got Cynthia McKinney. We're going to get into some of that, too. Police want lawmaker charged. U.S. Capitol Police sought an arrest warrant for Representative Cynthia McKinney after she tangled with a uniformed officer last week. Spokesman for U.S. Attorney Kenneth Weinstein said he was reviewing the merits of the case. We are working with Capitol Hill Police to fully understand and appreciate the incidents, Channing Phillips said. Okay. Oh, Channing Phillips is the spokesman. Neither Phillips nor the police department would say what charge was being sought against McKinney or when any arrest warrant might be issued. McKinney spokesman acknowledged the investigation. We're aware that the wheels are turning in Washington. McKinney, 51, scuffled with a police officer March 29th when entering a House office building without her identifying lapel pin and did not stop when asked. Several police officers said the officer who was not identified asked her to stop three times. When she kept going, he placed a hand somewhere on her and she hit him. Gee, those are kind of sparse details, don't you think? This is according to the officials who spoke on the anonymity. It kind of depends. If someone took a finger and tapped her on the shoulder and said, excuse me, miss, now that's one thing. But if they put their hands on her in some manner or fashion, if they forcibly grabbed her and she smacked their hand, yeah, I would call that a slap. They're calling this everything from a stabbing to a punch. You know, we don't know what happened. It's going to be their word against her word. She's black, so gee, I wonder who's going to win that. Funny they don't have any cameras set up. You know, cameras are pretty cheap. You know they're going to charge the lady with this, and some idiot Republican wants to pass a resolution that the Capitol cops are doing a fine job. Well, geez, aren't these the same Capitol cops that roughed up Cindy Sheehan for wearing a shirt? Afterwards, they apologized and said, we shouldn't have done that. Well, you shouldn't have done it up front. You don't get to do shit, and then when it's over, say, oh, I shouldn't have done that. You know, that's what Bush and Cheney have been doing all this time for 5-6 years now. If you're holding a sign on the side of the road that says, we don't like the war, they arrest you. And then after you've been in jail for a day or two or whatever, you get arraigned and they drop the charges and say, oh, we're sorry, we shouldn't have done that. Well, no, dumbass, you shouldn't have done that up front. And as I said, the Democrats, if they had any brains, they'd go to some federal judge and get a whatever that's called, a prior resistance order, whatever it's called, to where the judge issues a ruling and says, no, the White House and the Secret Service will not arrest people up front and then afterwards apologize and let them go. If they would do that, you know, they could solve a lot of problems, but Democrats don't have the brains to solve their problems. They would rather step in the same hole again and again and again. But anyway, no telling how this is going to work out. But the other thing they're saying, she didn't have her lapel pin on her. Well, you kind of figure that that's going to happen. These are human beings. And she's been there 12 years, I think. You would think after 12 years of walking in the same building that the people might get to know her. And even if the officer was new, aren't there other officers there who's not, who are not on their first day? You just wouldn't think this would happen to a white person. And earlier, I guess by now it'd be last week, we mentioned how Neil Bortz was going to the big thing about Cynthia McKinney's new hairdo makes it look like Tina Turner peeing on an electric fence. Oh, duh, the imagery that pops into your mind. But why? You know, because she's black, we have to ridicule her that way. You know, she changes her hairstyle, and the subtext is, you know how those black people are, you know, with their hair, you know how they are, you know how those people are with their hair. And so they can't quite come out and say that, so they just go on with this Tina Turner business and the electric fence, just so the white boys can poke each other and say, see, isn't it just like Rush said, them niggers are always causing some kind of trouble. Why can't they just shut up? Why can't they just go away? That's the whole point. Behind the Republican Party, the glue that holds them together is their hatred for blacks and gays. Why can't they get off that?
Hey, Bart. First time on the new Bart phone. This is Tom from the Funny Farm. Just wanted to congratulate you on part one of show 90. Just finished listening to it. And it was a very, very funny show and a nice show. The production quality has gone way up. The microphone sounds a lot better now that the cone of silence is the right way around. I wanted to also thank you for that Oscar stuff. That's the only chance that I've got to hear that because I don't watch that crap on the TV. So just want to let you know that is a very important thing when you put those little clips in. It's really nice for some of us. We don't sort through all the dreck to get to that gold. You do it for us, and thanks a lot. I also wanted to really, really say, Tommy, you are a freaking genius, because all the time you were doing that last rant there, Bart, Tommy was playing some music in the background while you were ranting on about how terrible it is, and it was just the juxtaposition was amazingly funny, and especially after listening to all that wonderful stuff from Jon Stewart and George Clooney just before that. So, great job. Can't wait to dig into the other three. Going to be doing that a little bit later. Thanks a lot. I guess I'll talk to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Now, Inside Edition with Deborah Norville.
It was a talk show showdown full of fireworks. Popular TV host Sean Hannity faced off with actor Alec Baldwin on a radio show. The confrontation quickly went from bad to worse, and as Les Trent reports, the pair almost went from the airwaves straight to the boxing ring.
I would never do your show, Sean Hannity. You're a no-talent hack.
That's a fiery Alec Baldwin exploding at conservative talk show host Sean Hannity.
Listen, Sean, you incredibly ignorant boob.
You're a spewing all your Hollywood egomaniac.
And that's Hannity firing back.
Sean, you are a no-talent, ignorant fool from out in Hempstead.
Talk show host begging for a job. Good luck.
The angry exchange started when Hannity phoned into a call-in show on WABC Radio in New York that Baldwin was co-hosting. Hannity, the co-host of Fox's Hannity and Combs, demanded to know why the liberal Baldwin wouldn't appear on his radio show.
Alec, I wanted to give you an official WABC welcome, considering you were supposed to come on my program last week, and you didn't show up. What happened?
I wouldn't dream of coming on your program, Sean Hannity. Why would I want to come on the show with a no-talent former construction worker hack like you?
The exchange got uglier and more personal.
Hey, are you the reckless third-rate Hollywood actor that said that Dick Cheney's a terrorist? Are you the guy?
Yes,
the
guy I am.
Then Baldwin cut off Hannity.
Let's do to Sean what Sean would do to a caller that's doing what Sean's doing now. Sean, are you done, honey? Are you finished?
No, sweetheart. Thanks anyway.
Okay. Best of luck, Sean. You no tell.
But Hannity refused to go quietly away.
Are you the guy that said our president's a CIA mass murderer?
I wonder why you didn't come
on the program and defend it, you gutless coward.
But when another caller brought up Baldwin's angry divorce with ex-wife Kim Basinger, the actor had enough. Baldwin bolted from the studio, even as his co-host Brian Whitman pleaded with him to stay.
No, please don't leave. I beg of you.
We caught up with Sean Hannity at his radio show at WABC.
He didn't have the courage to stand up and debate on substance, and he ran out of the studio, frankly, like the coward that he is.
And Hannity says his feud with Baldwin isn't likely to end anytime soon.
Alec, if you ever have the courage, come on the program. We'll make him back up these ridiculous statements of his, but I don't think he'll be able to do it.
Baldwin writes on his blog that he did not walk out on the radio interview. He was scheduled to leave at that time anyway.
Hey, Bart, this is Bob Reynolds. I find it interesting this morning to read the news and see that 100 insurgents on foot have stormed a prison in Iraq and have released 30 insurgents. That compares to our billions of dollars we spent on 45 or so helicopters making this massive show of force and capturing 40 insurgents about 2 weeks ago. So we spend billions to capture 40 and 100 people on foot release 30 today. I think that's interesting. So keep the faith, appreciate your work, and I'll talk to you later. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Are you listening to me?
Yeah. You get to go and fight battles for things you believe in every day, and it is so admirable. I've never really stood up for anything. I know it sounds all stars and stripey, but my grandfather, I'm sorry, but he did. He talked about the America he fought for. Now I want to fight for it.
Okay, first of all, and I think your grandpa would agree with me, there's nothing more American than paying your taxes.
I want to have my day in court.
At the risk of having your day in prison.
I've always believed the United States was not only the strongest country, but also the most moral one.
And so, naturally, that's what prompted you to tell them to stick it.
I just felt so embarrassed.
Embarrassed? Over?
Well, I guess first, the whole weapons of mass destruction thing. Now, maybe we lied, maybe we made a mistake, but either way, as goofs go, to start a war? Hello?
It embarrassed you.
Didn't it you?
Objection. Miss Hughes, please do not address the jury.
It seems as though you opposed the war.
Actually, I don't. If the government had said we need to do anything to get rid of Saddam, I would have said, let's roll. And if we had apologized after making such a humongous gaffe with the whole weapons thingy, I'm sure I could have accepted that too. But instead, we were so arrogant. It was embarrassing.
Yes. Anything else?
Torture. Our military tortured prisoners. Aren't we supposed to be the country that stands for human rights? I mean, doesn't it just make you want to hide?
Miss Hughes.
And spying. We spy on our own citizens now? All this to fight terrorists because they're a threat to freedom as we know it? I mean, talk about burning down the barn to kill the rats. Am I the only one embarrassed by this?
What about the military, Miss Hughes? Have our soldiers embarrassed you?
I've always been as proud of our troops as I am grateful.
Now, I believe you said that you're actually for the war. I guess you'd be for winning it.
Of course.
Well, what chance do you think we'd have of victory if people started not paying their taxes?
Not good.
But I guess if you're ashamed enough to be an American, it's okay.
She never said she was ashamed to be. She said she was embarrassed as, a distinction often missed by those who confuse dissent for disloyalty.
We will have closing arguments, and then the jury will rule, and then I will give my sentence.
Small point, Judge. You probably shouldn't indicate to the jury you expect a sentencing. I could be wrong.
Enough jibber-jabber!
Clearly, she committed a crime. She didn't pay her taxes. The only question is, will you hold her accountable? Now, no doubt Mr. Shore will try to paint her as some kind of activist hero. But she is no hero, folks. At a time when freedom has never been more precarious in this country, for her to refuse her civic and legal duty to pay her taxes while we have soldiers dying over there, this woman's deliberate action is as unpatriotic, as un-American, as it is illegal. This is the cut-and-run behavior of a coward. Don't you dare declare her a hero.
When the weapons of mass destruction thing turned out not to be true, I expected the American people to rise up. They didn't. Then, when the Abu Ghraib torture thing surfaced, and it was revealed that our government participated in rendition, a practice where we kidnap people and turn them over to regimes who specialize in torture, I was sure then the American people would be heard from. We stood mute. Then came the news that we jailed thousands of so-called terrorist suspects, locked them up without the right to a trial or even the right to confront their accusers. Certainly, we would never stand for that. We did. And now it's been discovered the executive branch has been conducting massive illegal domestic surveillance on its own citizens, you and me. And I at least consoled myself that finally, the American people will have had enough. Evidently, we haven't. In fact, if the people of this country have spoken the messages, we're okay with it all. Torture, warrantless search and seizures, illegal wiretappings, prison without a fair trial, or any trial, war on false pretenses. We as a citizenry are apparently not offended. There are no demonstrations on college campuses. In fact, there's no clear indication that young people even seem to notice. Well, Melissa Hughes noticed. Now, you might think, instead of withholding her taxes, she could have protested the old-fashioned way, made a placard and demonstrated at a presidential or vice presidential appearance. But we've lost the right to that as well. The Secret Service can now declare free speech zones to contain, control, and in effect, criminalize protest. Stop for a second and try to fathom that. At a presidential rally, parade, or appearance, if you have on a supportive t-shirt, you can be there. If you're wearing or carrying something in protest, you can be removed. This in the United States of America. This in the United States of America. Is Melissa Hughes the only one embarrassed? And what I'm most sick and tired of is how every time somebody disagrees with how the government is running things, he or she is labeled un-American.
Evidently, it's speech time.
And speech in this country is free, you hack. Free for me, free for you, free for Melissa Hughes to stand up to her government and say, stick it.
Objection.
I object to government abusing its power to squash the constitutional freedoms of its citizenry. And God forbid anybody challenge it. They're smeared as being a heretic. Melissa Hughes is an American. Melissa Hughes is an American. Melissa Hughes is an American. Last night, I went to bed with a book. The book contained a speech by Adlai Stevenson. The year was 1952. He said, "The tragedy of our day is the climate of fear in which we live, and fear breeds repression. Too often, sinister threats to the Bill of Rights, to freedom of the mind, are concealed under the patriotic cloak of anti-communism." Today, it's the cloak of anti-terrorism. I know we are all afraid. But the Bill of Rights, we have to live up to that. We simply must. That's all Melissa Hughes was trying to say. She was speaking for you.
Will the defendant please rise? Mr. Foreman, the jury has reached a unanimous verdict.
Yeah, Judge, guilty.
Wait till I ask you. Now, what say you?
Suspense is killing me.
We, the jury, find the defendant, Melissa Hughes, guilty as charged.
Ms. Hughes, the jury has found you guilty of federal income tax evasion.
Permission to be heard on sentencing, Judge.
Stop your hooting. I'm in no mood for any more of your jibber-jabber. The court fines Ms. Hughes $1,000 and sentences her to 30 days in prison. Suspended. Adjourned. Tomorrow.
30 days in prison?
Suspended, Melissa. Jibber Jabber gave you no jail time.
Hi, I'm not on the U.S. Supreme Court. It was nice to see Antony Scalia in the post-worship glow of his faith in gratitude for being a white, wealthy, Republican attorney who has gone hunting with Dick Cheney and yet doesn't have a face that looks like the Bonnie and Clyde death car. Tell his critics to go fuck themselves in the ass. Evidently, he thought that as he, the creator of the President of the United States from a lousy hungover frat boy, he could step out of church, curse and make an obscene gesture, and have the corrupt minions of the Boston Catholic Church keep his arrogance a secret. Buffonculo, Antony.
Remember that uneasy feeling that you had in the pit of your stomach, that the war in Iraq was a foregone conclusion, planned in advance by the administration, and that all the posturing before the UN and reassurances to the public that war was not inevitable were merely a puppet show put on for the public's benefit. Well, it turns out,
you're right.
Won't your friends at the coffee shop, bookstore, / poetry jamatorium be impressed? This week, the New York Times reported on a 3-year-old confidential memo describing a meeting between Tony Blair and President Bush, which reveals the United States plan to invade Iraq regardless of whether WMDs were ever found. Quote, the start date for the military campaign was penciled in for 10 March. This was when bombing would begin. Penciled in. In the president's defense, if he were really serious about war, what do you think? That was January 2003. Here's the president on March 6th of that year.
I want to remind you that it's his choice to make as to whether or not we go to war.
On March 10th. If Saddam Hussein prefers the 11th, that works for us as well. We don't care. Actually, when you look at the president's calendar from the month of March, hey, Catherine Harris. Catherine Harris missed March 2003 on Bush's stacked and packed calendar. Anyway, it seems clearly the 10th was the best day for Bush. I'm sure you can freeze that on your TiVo and see what the hell we were talking about. One other interesting detail in the memo, Bush had suggested ways to provoke Iraq into a confrontation in the absence of WMDs, including painting a U.S. jet with U.N. colors and flying it over Iraq in hopes that they would fire on it. The plan backfired, unfortunately, when the Iraqis welcomed the U.N. jet, believing it was carrying Angelina Jolie.
The American people can know that every measure has been taken to avoid war.
On March 10th.
This is a dangerous time. I wish it wasn't this way. You know, I wish I wasn't the war president. Who in the heck wants to be a war president? I don't. To assume I wanted war is just flat wrong.
Karl Rove is an idiot because he absolutely only knows one way to win, and that's to cheat. All he's done is win a rigged game. That doesn't take a genius. How smart would Karl Rove have been if anybody bothered to count the votes in Florida in 2000? What if the media actually covered Ohio in 2004? Even Air America threw its hands up and said, oh, we're not going down that road. What? I said from Florida on remote. What? Well, he wouldn't seem like such a genius if they actually provided people with the proper number of voting machines in Ohio and didn't keep them waiting longer than the people in Afghanistan wait to vote. Oh, Randy, that was just bad news. Concentrate on the good news. What's the good news? People in Florida didn't have to wait 8 to 10 hours to vote. Did you count their votes? No, but the good news was it was a good-looking Tuesday. It's very sad, and it's very sick, and it's what is Karl Rove's toughest decision? Should he step down, or should he wait to be indicted? That's what this guy is dealing with today, and he's a freaking genius. The New York Times has an article today, and it asks if it's time for a relief pitcher. I always thought he was a catcher. I think we could all agree we need relief from Karl Rove, who's still putting on these ridiculous attack ads saying, Russ Feingold hates babies, puppies, and kitties. Russ Feingold wants to outlaw the American flag, apple pie, and teddy bears. Really?
Yes.
Who paid for this ad?
The opinions expressed by the host, guest, or callers are not necessarily those of the host, guest, or callers.
Where do I call? Call Russ Feingold at home. Here's his number, 202. I mean, it's crazy, but that's what they do. They literally run attack ads. It's nothing but smear people who are trying to uphold the Constitution, who are trying to get the president to give them some truth, who are trying to figure out whether or not this president needs to be overseen. I mean, look, this president needs a babysitter. So why are they saying that Congress should have no oversight when the guy is not capable of keeping steering clear of sharp objects in a room when left by him? Thank God the Oval Office doesn't have any corners. Can you imagine how black and blue he'd be? I'm serious. Russ Feingold is pro-autism. No, he's not. The president's the poster boy. Let's cure it before we get another one like him. This is a really sad thing. And the attack ad's real. It's absolutely real. And our parody was supposed to be funny. And in comparison to the real ad, our parody sounded normal. That's just not acceptable to me. Russ Feingold likes commies, Nazis, and wild coyotes that run through Central Park. He does? Yes. So, what are you saying? Russ Feingold's Al-Qaeda. He is? Yes. What else is he? He's a one-man epidemic. Russ Feingold is a bird flu carrier. He is? Helen! Helen! Russ Feingold takes dogs, kittens, teddy bears, he's pro-bird flu, he likes commies, Nazis, and he's Al-Qaeda! Oh my God, Harry! Oh my God! We've been infiltrated!
We'll be right back with Bart Cop Radio.
Bankers too. Let's get up and learn those rules. Weatherman and the crazy chief.